Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Welcome to the Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, where you get multifamily investing made real. Learn from top players in the real estate investment world as they share their secrets with you and discover proven strategies on apartment investing that actually work. To learn more about Wheelbarrow Profits, visit jakeandgino.com, your one-stop shop for everything multifamily. Now to your hosts, Jake and Gino.
Hello, everybody. This is Jake Stenziano, host of the Wheelbarrow Profits Podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, the chef, the father of six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, back fresh, ready to go from the Bahamas, Gino Barbo. Gino, how's it going?
Jake Stenziano, how are you doing, bro?
Always making it happen, big man. Guys, this is where we normally would plug something to pay the bills. Now, for our listeners, we only showcase products and services that we approve or use in our own business. This time, we're going to tell you about something of ours, specifically our Wheelbarrow Profits community. G-Dad, take it away.
Mr. Stenziano, back from the Bahamas, thank God. But I'm not dealing with 15 inches.
Slightly tanned, a little bit of a tan.
You know, looking good, right? More, but okay. We've been working hard at growing our community, Jake, you know, like-minded investors, and the results of our members has been really growing pretty great. It's been pretty incredible. We're looking to grow this amazing group of investors. What we're looking to do is those who want to follow our proven framework of buy right, manage right, and finance right we've created. We want to leverage all the connections we have. We have that education platform and mentorship as ways to take your business to the next level.
So guys, you want to find out more, get on the website, jakeandgino.com. Across the top, you're going to see something that says work with us. Click on that and then let the magic happen. Right, G-Dad?
That's right, bro.
Take it away.
Got to get the snowball. Got to take that first step, right? We can't take it for you.
All right. Shameless plug over. Today's guest is Todd Dexheimer. Todd purchases and syndicates multifamily apartments in emerging markets. His specialty is buying distressed properties, renovating and repositioning them. Todd is also a multifamily real estate agent specializing in selling mid-size multifamily properties in the Twin Cities, aka snow, hell, blizzard of the world, from what he's telling us.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's beautiful here.
So without further ado, 30 inches of snow on the lake. Todd, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it is. I will give it. It is beautiful outside. It's just this like white paradise out here. Just don't step out. It looks great from inside.
All right, man. Well, listen, I know you've done just about everything real estate. Why don't you tell us how you got started and why you got in the game?
So how I got started, I guess I'll start with why. I was a school teacher. And it just wasn't clicking for me. It wasn't really what I wanted to do. So I started reading books and started trying to figure out what I wanted to do. There was a time there I was going to go back to school, become a doctor. I kept on telling my wife, I got to do something when I grow up and I got to figure it out. And so that was almost literally from like the second or third year I was teaching. I was just like, I got to figure this out. And so so started reading books and thought, boy, I could do this. In the summers, I was working construction. All the way from high school, all the way through while I was teaching too. And so I had the construction background. I enjoyed, the real estate, you know, in that aspect. And I started hitting on these books about real estate and it really just clicked. So that was 2008 by the time it really clicked and I just, you know, that it just made so much sense. And so then I didn't really understand what happened to the market. You know, in 2006 to 2008, that big, huge crash. I didn't quite grasp it until I started actually getting into it going, holy cow. I mean, I could buy these houses for $60,000. I can do the work myself, that's what I started doing. And I'm all in it, you know, $70,000, $80,000 on these houses and I can rent them for $1,500 a month. It's just like the math makes a lot of sense here. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how I got started. It was perfect timing right during the crash, 2008, and just things aligned. It made so much sense to go. And so when I started, I bought my first rental house. It was a single family house, and that was the one I bought for $60, and you know, was renting. I think it was $1,400 I was renting for. And then I bought our own house, my wife and I. We bought a foreclosure in St. Paul that we were, you know, renovated while we were living in. And then I also bought a flip with a partner and did a flip. So that was all kind of all at the same. I bought those all in August of 2008.
Let's backtrack a little bit, Todd. Why did you go to school? Well, why did you go to college and why school teacher?
I went to college to party and meet girls.
Okay, good. That's a good reason. It's an expensive reason. That's a good reason.
Everybody's reason.
I went to college because that's what you're supposed to do, right? I mean, isn't that what everybody's supposed to do?
All the lemmings, right? Walk off that.
There was nothing else to do. I mean, I had to figure out what I wanted to do when I grew up, and I was, you know, high school is coming to an end. You got to figure out what you want to be. I wanted to be a teacher. I don't know why I wanted to be a teacher. I just
what kind of teacher?
Fun. I was a high school industrial tech teacher.
I was supposed to be a gym teacher.
I was teaching shop class and stuff. It was honestly okay. There was things I really enjoyed about it, and then there was other things that drove me crazy about it, like the all the political kind of BS, all the administrative stuff, and they wouldn't let you teach how you wanted to. So that kind of drove me crazy a little bit, but. That's why I went to college, because you're supposed to. I mean, that's just the way it was.
So what would you tell your kids or anyone who asks you about college now?
Yeah, it's funny. I talk about that with my wife, you know, quite frequently. I don't think I will push my kids into college. I mean, there's definitely good things about going to college, for sure. I mean, it is a great life experience. And one of the things I would say about college and why it's not that bad of an option for people is because you have no clue what you want to do when you're 18. You have no clue who you are when you're 18. So going to college gets you a further education. It definitely does do that. It maybe brainwashes you in certain ways, but that's a different subject. But by the time you're out, at least now you're, you know, 22-ish. You probably still have almost no clue who you are, but at least you've got a little bit of step up. You've created that education. So there's good things about it, but you know, I don't know. We'll see when my kids are there. They're 8 and 4 right now, so they've got a ways to go. I definitely won't like force them to go to college, for sure.
Let me ask you, how did you get into that first deal? I mean, how did it come to you? How did you get it? How did you finance it? What mistakes did you make?
How did I get into the first deal? I'll use the rental as my first deal, because I can't remember which one came first. They all came like within the same week. We saved up. We had probably 30 grand, 25, 30 grand in our bank account. So I bought this thing for $60,000. So 20% down payment plus closing costs, whatever that equals. And then I had to stick the rest of our saved money into it for renovation. So I found the deal. I hooked up with a bunch of realtors. I found a realtor on Craigslist that was advertising foreclosure sales. I found a realtor through a friend. And I was going around looking. I probably looked at 100 to 200 houses of poor realtors. Boy, I mean, I looked at a lot of houses and wrote some offers, but looked at a lot of houses before I finally stuck onto one. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like wrote the offer, got it accepted, used every single penny we had pretty much to do the deal. And then I was able to fix it up, rent it. And then I met a lender who said, hey, you can refinance this thing. And that blew my mind, because I didn't think you could do that. And everybody preached that you couldn't, because this was 2008. I mean, the world had fallen apart. But I was able to refinance, pull all of my money plus another like 20 grand out of the thing.
Oh, that is awesome. How did you get past that fear? of doing that first deal, because everyone gets stuck with that fear and like the worst case scenario. And you started out probably the one of the worst times, because financing was a little bit more difficult. You know, everything's falling apart. So how did you get past that fear?
You know, I would say there's a couple things. First of all, when I put my mind to do something, I'm going to do it. When I tell myself I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. So I brainwashed myself enough by reading books and that I was going to do it. And that's that. And then it's, the next part is it just made sense. I mean, you looked at the numbers and it almost made no sense not to do it. So it was just too easy.
Yeah, but that's the thing. A lot of people are in the same situation as you. So what do you think actually pushed you to do it? Because sometimes you look at a deal and it's like, wow, this really makes no sense. And am I missing something? Because you always hear, is it too good to be true? So it sounds like it's too good to be true. So, I mean, what really pushed you over the hump? Was it really you just wanted to get out of teaching that badly? Did you want to take control of your life? I mean, what was like the thing that was shining to you?
Yeah, I would say I wanted to get out of teaching. That had definitely a lot to do with it. And I wanted to make that change. I saw the power in what could be, you know, and I knew the risks. There's definitely risks anytime you take that step, but I just saw the power of what it could be. And, you know, having enough rental properties to have that passive income, it just made so much sense that it was worth it to take that risk.
And how long did you think it took you to get that first deal from starting a reading education to actually going out and making offers?
At least a year. Yeah. I mean, I was reading at least a year for sure.
That's great.
I want to jump in real quick because you make a really good point there. It took us 18 months to get our first deal. We took it wasn't, you know, a time off, but from, you know, 2016 to 2017, we didn't get anything because we couldn't make any of the numbers work. So guys, it's one of these things where I always tell Gene, I think the best thing that we ever did is we didn't quit. You got to hang in there in this game, because it will come if you're persistent. And the minute you think you're there, something will happen. And you know, the world or the real estate world will throw kind of a wrench in it and make it seem like it's not going to happen. It's just, man, there's so much to being persistent in this game that will lead to your success. So I just wanted to make sure for all the guys out there, you got to hang in there because it will come. But if you quit, you're going to be back, you know, teaching shop class and cutting boards and, you know, stuff like that. So,
and I want to piggyback.
Still got all my fingers too, by the way.
Dude, that's big, bro. That's awesome.
let me piggyback off that real quick, because I think it's vitally important that it took Todd a year in the most favorable market of our lives in the last 20 years to find a deal, right? It took him a year to find a deal that it was absolute brainer. So if you're out there and you just started now in the last 3 months, you're like, I haven't found anything. Well, it's going to take you a little bit longer in this market because it's a lot harder. You have to go through a lot more deals. So, I mean, don't quit, don't give up, and make sure you have a big enough why. Maybe you're a shop teacher, you want to get out of it. Maybe you want to get your own financial freedom. You have to figure out the big why for it.
No doubt, because I'm going to tell you guys right now, the other side is worth it. Being on the corporate side, you know, being in that grind, you know, I hated it. And I'm going to tell you right now, being on the other side of it with true financial freedom is awesome. So guys, I'm telling you, it's worth the wait. It's worth putting the work to get there. So I would just, you know, I can't stress it enough, hanging in there till you make it work.
Todd,
it would have been very easy to just be impatient and buy
something. Pie in the sky, it's not real or it doesn't work, right?
Yeah.
I get what you're saying too.
Well, or do that or just be impatient and just, I see it so much now, especially because this market is different. You know, even if I was impatient at the time, I probably would have lucked out and, you know, been okay, because, although maybe not.
You had the market behind you, you're saying.
I had the market behind me, but things were still crashing when I bought. So there was still there were still houses out there that were selling for 200 grand that all of a sudden went all the way down to $125,000. So I could have got caught, but it had been impatient. But you've got to learn, and real estate's not that complicated of a game, but there's still lots of moving parts. So, you know, people grabbing an education like what you guys offer is so valuable. It's just super valuable for them to actually be able to get that education so they understand it. And like
shorten the learning curve. That's
shorten the learning curve, because everybody's impatient, right? And you're going to make mistakes if you don't learn it the right way. So That's my plug for you guys. I mean, you guys have an awesome.
Hey, we'll take it.
You guys are you're offering, and people should take advantage of it.
You know, Todd, the other thing, when you bought, rental rates too. I mean, vacancies were going up. I mean, houses were. That's the other thing. So, you're saying you're buying at the right time, but there's other things that are going on. So you can always find an excuse, right? Anyone who's bought in the last 2 or 3 years have paid inflated prices. They're going to say, well, you know what? The market's helped me out. But when you bought, there were other things that were going on. There was no lending going on.
People financing.
Financing, exactly. The people were not renting because they couldn't afford to rent. So there's always problems in the market. So, I mean, you can take a look at that, be an optimist and say, where's the opportunity? Or you can be a pessimist and say, that's too many problems, I'll pass. So.
And the guys that solve those problems are the guys that make the money.
That's right. So.
Well, in that house that I bought for $60,000, put another, you know, 20 into it. I'm all in at 80. I could have bought that house 3 years later for 40 grand.
Wow.
It went down in value truly, but I was able to create the value and I was be able to cash flow. It works though. So you can always make excuses. Like you said, it's never the perfect time to buy. It's never the perfect time to buy until it was the perfect time and you didn't.
When, let me ask you, Todd, when did the light go off for multifamily? When was that seminal moment you said, wow, single families are good, but here's the nirvana. Here is like the, you know,
So that's hard to pinpoint because I think the light went off almost right away, but the understanding that I actually do it. I didn't think I could actually buy a multifamily right away.
Why?
So that's why $1 million, $2 million.
It's scary, man. It's that big time stuff. I can't do that.
I can't buy a 40 unit building or a 50 unit building or even a 20 unit building. Well, I don't have any business doing that. I was 26 or 27. I was young. I couldn't do that.
He was still picking up 30 racks of Bush Light, hanging with the college buddies, man. It was like, we're not there yet. Takes a
minute, okay? So yeah, that was definitely mindset. I mean, so then I just kept in the single family game because it was easy and that's what I knew. And it was quick and I could throw an offer in, get a property 30 days later, 20 days later, I'm closed on that thing. We get a contractor in there, renovate it, boom, I got a renter, and now I'm cash flowing and I refinance it. It worked. And the system was okay. It wasn't a bad system. It just took me a long time to go, geez, I should have been doing this with multifamilies, not single families. And the power, you know, for your listeners, it's behind the zeros. You know, with the multifamily, with the unit number, you know, you got more zeros. With the dollar amount that you can make, you've got more zeros. So it's all behind the zeros. So I wish that light bulb truly would have, registered in my head. So I would say that was like 15. So I had a business partner for quite a while and, split with him, and right when I split with him, I said, I'm going to multifamily. That's what I'm doing.
Let's talk about that first deal, that first multifamily deal. How did you get it? How did the numbers look? How big was it? Did you finance it yourself? Did you raise money? Let's dive into that.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with my first multifamily when I kind of switched, because I did do a couple small multifamilies while I was flipping, but I'm going to put those to the side. Mm-hmm. So the first multifamily when I kind of switched my business to multifamily, it was a 22 unit building. It was outstate. It was in Cincinnati, Ohio. And I bought it on a land contract, 10% down. So
you're not supposed to do that, right? You can't do that, right?
You can't do that because it's a really hot market. Yeah, uh-huh. You can't uh-huh. buy land contracts. Yeah. Uh-huh. It's funny because I'm on Bigger Pockets as I know Gino you are, and I posted something like, or somebody posted something like that, like you can't do that kind of financing right now. It's not this time in the market. You're just going to insult people. And I went, really? Huh? I just did it. I wonder why I was able to do it. You know?
Uh-huh. So just this, like owner financing doesn't exist, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this guy, so he had a property, marketed. It was, I think it was 11 unit building. I went and looked at that and I liked it, but you know, I wanted something a little bit bigger. And so his agent says, well, he's got a 22 unit. I wonder if he'll sell that. So he calls him up on the spot and the guy goes, yeah, I'd sell it. Go take a look at it. So we went and took a look at that. I put an offer actually on both buildings. I didn't get the 11 unit. Somebody else paid more than what I was willing to pay. But this guy, I gave him an offer and I can't remember the exact price, but I gave him an offer and he tried to negotiate with me. And I said, well, look, I can do this as a land contract. Here's your payments. I showed him a payment schedule. I said, this is what you'll make on this, you know, land contract. I'll give you 10% down. And he said, I love that. I'll take it. So I actually paid him less money than than the other offer. Mm-hmm. Actually lowered my offer and showed him this payment schedule and he took it. He wanted it. He's retired. He retired. He doesn't want to deal with it anymore. It was a pain in his butt. And he was happy with it.
Would you consider a mom and pop seller, like a motivated seller, somebody who's just motivated to get out? Did the building have systems? Was he running it like a business or would you?
It had no systems. I mean, he had, you know, and it was distressed and that was part of the deal is, look, I mean, this is going to be tough to get financing on it. And by distressed, like the outside, it looked great, looked beautiful. The inside, some of the units looked okay, but then there was 9 vacancies.
Oh, wow.
Out of 22. I mean, that's a ton. And
he didn't want anything to do with it.
No, we did the walk through the due diligence and I walked every unit and we walked into units. He goes, oh, I've never seen this unit before. He hadn't even looked at all the units. He, you know, he's owned it for whatever, 8-10 years. He hadn't even been in all the units.
Wow.
So that, talk about mom and pop. I mean, he just, you know, he was just running it. He bought this building and was thinking it was going to throw off cash flow from day one. A lot of people do that.
So, I mean, there's a couple of questions before I get into how you repositioned it and all. Why Cincinnati? What drew you to that market?
Yeah, so I looked for markets that had a couple things, right? I was looking for job growth. I was looking for a population growth. And I was looking for markets also who took a decent size hit during the crash and hadn't quite climbed out of it yet. Mm-hmm. And that was Cincinnati. And the other thing I was looking for was affordability, renter affordability. And because I kind of am seeing what's happening and still happening is renters are being squeezed really hard. And in some markets, extremely hard. In Minneapolis right now, they're paying like 40% of their income in rent. In other markets, they're paying more than that even.
60.
So, yeah, 50, 60. I mean, mm-hmm. That's crazy. And so I looked for markets that were affordable, that were less than 30%. And Cincinnati was like 24% or something like that at the time. And so that's one of the biggest things I looked for. And then also had the other things that worked as well. So
guys, that's a great tip because what he's talking about is you have the ability for positive rent growth because people can still afford. So if you've got job growth coming in, you have population growing and you have the ability to raise those rents, maybe the supply of apartments isn't there. The demand is there. That's what allows you to get your rent growth. So you're going to have value add on the rent growth and value add on filling in those 9 units. So when you took this property over, what were the first couple of things you did to get the value going?
Yeah. So, I mean, immediately it was renovating the down units. The down units just hadn't been updated for who knows how long. I mean, just, you know, old nasty carpet, old kitchens, all that kind of stuff. So renovated the down units. There were beautiful hardwood floors underneath the carpet. So that was awesome. Super simple. Just rip out the carpet and refinish the wood floors. You know, update the kitchens, update the baths. And that was really it. There wasn't the massive, the common areas were all nice. Outside was spotless and really nice. So that was it. Just renovate the units and then advertise. I mean, he wasn't advertising at all.
Wow.
And he was undercharging for rents. I mean, I had a couple tenants that were paying $325 a month for a 1-bedroom right away. So I renovated a couple of units. I got some occupancy up. And then within a few months, I've notified those tenants that their rent's going to go up to $495, which is still under what I'm charging. They all stayed. And it all said this.
A little bit of paint and Craigslist goes a long way with these mom and pops, right?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. But the tenants that were, the tenants that were there, that were paying $325, you know what they said to me? Or not to me, but to my manager. we were expecting this. What we were thinking this was going to happen for a long time. They all expected this massive rent bump and they just weren't getting it. This guy was scared to up their rent from 325 up to
market. Everybody was scared. You see how much easier it is just to bite the bullet? Everyone's no more fears. Everyone's just living in the reality. You know, everyone was like living on the edge before. Get out of that.
Yeah. It's so yeah, it was pretty funny. And I hear people all the time get nervous about raising rents. And where else are you going to go?
So let me ask you, Todd, how did the numbers look before? Were you able to refi this building out and pull your cash out, or what was the strategy?
So strategy is just to, we've got great terms. So it's non-recourse. I got 10% down. I'm paying like 4.5% interest, something like that. So strategy is just to keep it for a while with him. I maybe will refinance the, you know, I like to refinance and roll, but I also like to make sure that my, you know, debt service coverage is good and my, you know, loan to value is really strong. So I try to stay around that 70% loan to value. Mm-hmm.
So when you got this deal done, what was the next step? Did you continue to look in Cincinnati, or are you looking at other markets?
Yeah, I got the deal done, and within probably 2 or 3 months, I closed in another 11 unit. And within another month or two after that, I closed on a 20 unit. And then I closed on a 13 unit. And then I closed on an 84 unit.
That's awesome. Oh, wow. Where did you get the rehab funds to do that first deal? Because a lot of students always ask me, hey, I got this deal. Where do I get money to rehab these things?
Yeah, so I got that from a private investor.
That's awesome.
I brought in private money. So that's definitely something I would tell anybody when they're, you know, starting, is build your networks. You don't necessarily need to use private money from day one. I'm not saying to do that, but it's definitely an option. I did basically. I mean, I told you at the beginning, I bought 3 properties at once. My third property was with a partner and with another money partner, because I didn't have money. So, I mean, you know, there's ways to get money. I know you guys have done a lot of it on your own, but I think if I remember from some of your podcasts that you've had maybe some family that have invested in some of your deals or been
my brother or something. Yeah, I had my brother as a partner. Yeah,
so it's all about, and obviously the two of you are partnering too. And so it's all about, you know, forming that partnerships to be able to continue to do business.
So what do you tell people when you have that limiting belief, you can't do a deal, and then all of a sudden you do a 22 unit deal, then you do the 11, then you do 80 up to 84. What clicked? What changed things for you?
Yeah.
It obviously became real and possible, and this is doable now.
I think that's more or less, it just became real. I mean, once I did that 22 unit deal, it's like, all right, game on. I mean, this is real. This is not that hard. And I, you know, a lot of people trust me. And so bringing in private money is, you know, it's challenging because I don't have this massive expansive network, but the people who do know me trust me. And so it was just, that's something that's real. And it made so much sense for me to bring in other people. And it made so much sense for me to continue to climb and grow and get larger units.
Todd, how did you build your teams out in Cincinnati?
So yeah, so teams, obviously one of the most important things when you're out of state investing and in-state investing, quite frankly, but building teams for me was all about referrals. So I would, you know, find the brokers, and you do that through LoopNet or whatever source you find your brokers. That's basically how I follow my brokers. I go on to LoopNet and go, okay, this guy's got a listing. You know, likely that listing's no good, but this guy's got a listing. So, and then you would ask that broker, hey, who are the managers, property managers you can suggest, and title companies and attorneys and so on and so forth. And then you do that same thing with the property managers. Hey, who are some good, you know, listing brokers? Who are some good mortgage people? Who are some good contractors? And you just continue to ask for those referrals throughout those referrals. And eventually you've got a list of people that you can use, and you see the same name over and over and over. And so when you ask 10 different real estate brokers, you know, and you see the same property manager four times, and you see the same broker four times, you see this, you know, all of a sudden now you've got people that are the main players in the market and who people trust.
I wanted to ask this question before and I forgot to, but your investment strategy, what are you typically looking for as far as cap rates? When you first started, what were the cap rates when you first started, cash on cash, debt coverage, and what are they, I guess, transition to now in this current market? I see that smile because I can see the pain coming. I can see from 8, 9 down to 5 and 6, right?
So my first actual apartment that I bought was a 15 unit in St. Paul, and I bought that, renovated it. When I was all done renovating, it was at like a 16 cap.
Wow. Didn't make any money then, huh?
Yeah. I wish I would have kept it. The guy actually, I sold it. I sold it for, I think, 700. I bought it for like 300, sold it for 700, put some work into it. But the guy right now is selling it for 1.1 million. And he'll probably get it.
Wow.
Crazy. It's crazy.
Wow.
So yeah, so Mark, you know, cap rates were 8, 9, 10, 11, and whatever up if you're buying distressed. And now, I mean, if you're buying distressed, you might be able to get it into like that double digit, maybe, if you're, you know, if you're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
But you're probably looking at, if you're buying, you know, something slightly distressed, you'll get it high single digits, you know, in the 9s or whatever. But you're going to be buying from the start, you know, low cap rates. I mean, you're talking like 5, 6, maybe 7, if you're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't focus so much on cap rates, and I actually never really have. I focus on where can this property go? Where can I take it? Cause I'm not buying trophy properties. So I'm looking at where can I take this property? What's it look like right now? What's the occupancy? Where are the rents at? You know, and what can I do to it to improve it? And then where will that be? And what kind of returns can I make on that?
I like that. You know, you talk to a lot of guys on Bigger Pockets. You're fortunate, like Jake and I, have gotten in, I guess, at a good time. What do you tell guys or investors now saying, how do I get into it? Because I'm not, you know, buying a 10 and 12 caps. How do I start? How do I get into this thing now? How do I find a deal? That's the two biggest questions for us. How do I find a deal and where do I get the money? So, you know, any advice for the listeners?
Well, first of all, be very patient, right? And we talked about at the beginning, you've got to be patient. If you're not patient, you're going to get burned. You have to understand where we are in this market. I mean, we are not at the bottom. I don't know if we're at the top, but we're not at the bottom. And we're definitely somewhere in between the top and bottom. I would say closer to the top. Would you guys agree?
I would totally agree, yes.
And so you've got to be careful, because if you're buying closer to the top, you've got to make sure everything is right on. And so just be patient, be very patient, partner with people that have experience. You know, and how do you find the deals? That's going to be it's all about relationship building with the owners, with these mom and pops, like you guys, you know, push, and relationships with the brokers. And it's going to take a while. Again, that takes patience too. You're not just going to meet somebody for the first time and talk to them, and all of a sudden you've got this golden opportunity. You're not going to talk to a broker that's been doing his business for 30 years and all of a sudden be his top number one buyer. It's just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. So
you've got to be patient. You've got to build those relationships and take your time. And same thing with investors. You've got to take your time. You've got to build your relationships. You've got to let them know and understand you and your business models and all that kind of stuff. And always just continue to push along, because in this type of market, you're going to either make a mistake by going too fast, or you're going to get burned out because it's taking too long. And so you've got to, like, you have to understand that to me in the first place, and
mm-hmm.
be able to weather it.
I like that. What do you love about the business and what do you hate about the business?
I love the business, period. I mean, I love the freedom that it allows. I love what you're able to do to a building. You know, I'm buying distressed buildings. I'm oftentimes buying buildings that people shouldn't even be living in. And I'm giving them a solid place to live. I'm renovating their units. I'm renovating the whole property and giving the people that are living there a great place to live. I love that part. I enjoy taking this big dump and turning it into something actually nice. And I like the relationship part of the business. I like the relationships with the brokers. I like relationships with guys like you. I like building relationships with my investors, bankers, all that kind of stuff. You ask what don't I like? I don't like tenants that don't pay and that cause problems. I mean, that's part of the business. But, you know, I definitely don't like that.
So if you're a tenant of his out there, pony up, all right? Stress the guy out.
Come on, pay your rent because you shouldn't have free rent, right? You can't go to the grocery store and steal a bunch of groceries.
Dude, he sounds like me 3 years ago, Gino. If you're taking a gallon of milk up to the register, you pay for it in time, right?
You pay for it, right? Don't trash my units that we just renovated for you to give you a nice place to live. Don't come in there and trash it. Respect. Wow. You know, I guess there's some other frustrations sometimes, but it is what it is. It's a business, and in any business you're going to have challenges, and you're going to have to work through those challenges. Right now, I'm, you know, out of state investing is very challenging. Getting financing can be very challenging. I'm working on a project right now, and I think it's a great deal. It's 120 unit building, but you know, I'm out of state, and so it's distressed. So getting financing is extremely challenging.
And you know what's coming up on the questionnaire from the agencies, Fannie or Freddie, when you go to refi it at some point? You know, is there a principal in state? You know, that I always see that on the questionnaires as they come across.
Yeah. Yeah, no matter what. I mean, if you're out of state, there's a challenge. I get a lot of banks that just say, nope, sorry, you're out of state. We can't do it.
So then you are not looking in your backyard at all. Have you just gotten out of the backyard because it's just too expensive up there, or?
Yeah, I mean, I look, right? It's fun to look, but I don't find anything. I always look, but our prices have gotten so high. It's been such a good market in Minneapolis for so long. We did hit a little hiccup, you know, during the crash in the multifamily. But it mostly hit our small multifamily, the 15 unit and down, or 20 unit and down. We just don't have a lot of distressed assets. And people know, everybody knows that's here, that I can sell a C-class building for a 6 cap. Everybody knows. So why would you sell it for a 7 cap or an 8 cap?
Mm-hmm. Wow. I didn't think the market was that hot up there. I mean, why is it so? I mean, is it
hot market, cold weather?
Yeah. Is there a lot of jobs up there?
Yeah. A lot of jobs. Our occupancy is extremely high. I think we've got the lowest vacancy rate in the country, or one of the lowest. We're in the, for sure, the top five.
You can only build for 2 months out of the year, so there's not much, you know, supply. That's what the problem is.
Supply is starting to come. We see what happens there, but the supply, we
got 30 inches of ice to melt first.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can't put a foundation in. We are a market that traditionally doesn't, we're kind of just, you know, we're super conservative, so we don't build a ton of buildings right away. So now we're starting to see that tick up. So it'll be interesting to see, but we're very conservative. And same thing with rents. We're typically not that market that has that like 8% rent increase. We're like 1 to 3. We don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. You know, that's that Minnesota nice. I don't know.
That's really ironic, though, because usually when you have low cap rates, there's really no risk, or there's, because, so this is really odd to me, because you have no real return, but there's really no risk. There's nothing going on. So you would expect a little bit higher of a cap rate because there's nothing really going on in that market, but they get a 6 cap and they get really, you know, not much growth going on as far as rent growth and as far as that. It's just ironic to me.
I'm hearing a lot of slow and steady wins the race there, right?
It is. It's very slow and steady, but it's been slow and steady since like 1992. You know, where is your risk? People are willing to pay, you know, you're willing to pay more for an A cap or A property because there's less risk. Same thing with Minneapolis. You're willing to pay a little bit more because there's less risk. We just, you know, is there gonna is there going to be a crash? What's going to cause it in Minneapolis? It's hard to see. It might just continue to go up slowly. So,
So let me ask you, what's your best real estate investing tip for the listeners?
We've hit on being patient, I think, quite a bit, and that would definitely be my number one tip. Number two, I guess, would be to learn, continue to learn, continue to grow, continue to do things that are going to put yourself in position to succeed. And that's going to be through learning books, through learning with your program, through learning with partnerships, partnering with people that are already doing it. Figuring out how you're going to get yourself into the corridor, even though maybe you're not an expert day one. So you've got to surround yourself with people and with the education that you need to get in.
So you're touching on self-development right there. What about personally, what's your best habit for success? Something that you do from the self-development standpoint?
So something that I do,
what's a habit that leads to your success?
I would say there's one of my biggest assets is that I am willing to hustle and grind, as much as anybody else, and just continue to persevere. Another thing that I've been doing lately that's really helped me is time blocking. And I've got my like time blocking list. So that's another habit that I've been doing lately that's been like just phenomenal. Yeah, see, I got to get that a spreadsheet like that. Right now it's just on a notebook because I just started time.
It's all right, man. It's okay.
But yeah, I mean.
I got you in the block.
It's huge. It's huge.
What would you have done differently starting out?
Started bigger, quicker.
Yeah.
I'm a proponent for starting.
Easier said than done, right? Like I think it's much easier said than done.
And I'm a proponent for starting where you can. If it's a single family, if it's a duplex or whatever it is. But then
just position yourself going though, right? That action, get started. Yeah.
Yeah. So I stalled, what I did is I was buying single families and duplexes and whatever. And I bought, I had 50 or so of those and I was flipping and I got caught in the flipping game. And I didn't grow. I got comfortable. I got fat and happy. Don't get fat and happy. Continue to grow. So
I think what you're talking about is what a lot of people get caught up in is transactions don't make you wealthy. Equity makes you wealthy. And people, it's like dangling a carrot. It's the deal junkie. I'm going to do another deal. I'm going to do another flip. And you've got these checks coming in, but all of a sudden you've got to pay taxes on these checks. It's not what you make. It's what you keep. That's the problem with flipping because you really can't shelter the income. It's a nice transaction. It's a nice check at the end of the month. And there's nothing wrong with that. If you can take that money and put some of it aside to put, squirrel and get that nest egg going for the next multifamily. That's what I want everyone on this call to do. I'm not saying don't fix and flip, but at least know what you're doing and at least know the disadvantages because there's a lot of disadvantages in doing that strategy because it's the next deal. You're always looking to the next deal and you don't really have a plan for yourself. You don't have a vision for yourself for the next 5 years because all it is the next deal. And I'm telling you right now, listen to this words. Transactions do not make you wealthy. Equity makes you wealthy.
Yeah.
Just absolutely. Think if the next deal paid you for life.
Yeah.
Every time you're a transaction junkie on multifamily. So every time you do one, you can pay for the rest of your life on it.
Yeah. And flipping, I agreed, flipping.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Flip if you want to gain some.
You were saying you got comfortable cash. I think that's the key point.
Yeah.
Meaning that you knew how to do it. So you're like, I'm comfortable because I've done it. I've been successful with it, but you knew it wasn't from a philosophical business standpoint, the right place to be. I'm sorry, for putting words in your mouth, but that's what I'm hearing from my end.
No, that's exactly right. I did like 100-ish, 100 plus flips, 150.
So you don't tell me how to listen. I'm interrupting right now.
it was insanity. It was just doing these flips and even, some of them weren't making that much money and it's just like, it's not worth doing. I might as well go get a job if I'm going to keep on doing so many flips. So I would never tell somebody not to do a flip. I would just say, do a flip in order to buy assets, in order to buy rental properties. Exactly what Gino said. Don't flip just to make that your real estate business. I don't think you're a real estate investor if you're flipping, you're a real estate developer.
I agree with you. And I was fortunate, or I guess you should say blessed, that I didn't get into the flipping because I had a job. So I already knew intuitively that, well, I don't want to get another job. I already have a restaurant job doing 55 hours a week. I don't want to get another job flipping houses. And I'd probably get good at it because I'm really great at managing people and managing time. But then I'm trading one job for the next job. I was just fortunate for that. So I'm just, I don't want to hammer the point, but I just want people to have eyes open and ears open and just say, well, why am I doing this? Just get clear on why you're flipping houses. And I hope ultimately it's because you want to get into a different space and get into a better tax bracket, better tax situation, and just be able to, you know, create that wealth for yourself.
And flipping can be really fun. You know, so if you do want to create yourself a new job,
yeah,
that's what you want to do.
But do one with a big margin on it. Like, don't do it for $5,000.
Yeah, yeah. And I never did that because even when you look at a deal and you go, this thing's going to make me $25,000, it doesn't take very long for that $25,000 to turn into a six. Zero.
Yeah.
Or six mm-hmm. Or yeah. negative
yeah.
six.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, do one with the big fat margin and then hopefully then you'll make some money.
Any books that you like to recommend to people, business, general business, you know, any real estate, anything like that? Is there one that made a difference in your life that you want to recommend?
There's a lot that have made a big difference in my life. One of my favorite ones is How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. Love that book. There's just a ton. I mean, I've got books all over the place that I read all the time. The E-Myth, I love that one. I just got done reading that one. So yeah, there's a bunch.
What project are you excited about right now?
So I got two projects I'm really excited about. One is this 84 unit that I closed on. I closed on that not too long ago, and we're doing a full renovation. We're renovating, there's been, I think, 14 units that have been renovated. So we're renovating all but 14 units, doing work to the outside, just turning this whole thing around. So I'm really excited for that. There's tons of potential on the building, and I think it'll provide just an awesome, it'll be great for the community as well. This building's just been an eyesore and a problem for the tenants to, you know, live in this gross building. So that's going to be great as well. And then, I've got 120 unit that I'm working on right now, trying to get that through, to close. So I'm excited to continue with that project too.
That's great. It's like our progression. Also, you start with a small unit, 25, go to 36, go to 136 and back down. It's just like, that's how the progression is. You think big, but start small. And then from that small thing, all of a sudden it's the snowball effect that I like to talk about. I mean, all of a sudden things start clicking and it makes sense and it's easier and you're growing your teams. And all of a sudden you've got more capital to outlay and you know how to take an 84 unit building that needs 50 units renovated. I mean, if that was your first deal, it'd probably be overwhelming and daunting, but guys, you know, start small. That's where you have to be. I mean, I totally agree with what Todd said. Start small, get comfortable, learn the business, build those teams. That was our big mistake. Our first deal, we didn't have teams. I wish we had team members that really could help us out. We didn't. We figured it out ourselves. But if you can do that and have
teams. It was the Jake and Gino team, bro. So if you didn't need anything more than that, all right?
We could have used help, bro. We could have used help.
Isn't it, you look back, though, at the beginning days and everybody – anybody that started is probably going to be the same. I mean, I look back at the beginning days, I was the one finding the properties. I was the one, you know, I did everything from start to finish. I was the one working on the properties.
I'm going to do everything, right?
I was going to the properties. I was a full-time teacher. I would get done with teaching at 3 o'clock and don't tell the principal. I was supposed to stay there till like 4. I would get down at 3 and I would drive right to my property and I'd start working on it. And I'd get home at like 2 o'clock in the morning and go wake up at 6 and go do it again.
So you are lucky you still got all those fingers in.
Yeah. I should have lost a few of them.
I got two more questions for you. So the first one is, if people want to get in on this 120 unit deal that you got coming up, how do they get a hold of you to participate and join in the fun?
Well, first of all, I can't let somebody in on a 120 unit deal.
Oh, it's closed out.
I don't know. The rules are you have to have a relationship with them. So if somebody wants to build a relationship with me to talk about future investments.
All right. So if people want to get a hold of you and become a friend.
I just wanted to make sure I don't get into any legal. Call and get you into this deal. Although we are, so we haven't done the offering yet. We are thinking about doing the offering, or we are going to be doing the offering, but we're talking right now with my attorney.
About someone wants to take you out to coffee. What do I do that?
Talking with my attorney about doing a score offering. And so that's a publicly advertised offering. It's similar to like a 506C.
Mm-hmm.
So to get a hold of me, they can go to, well, they can email me directly at todd@venturedproperties.com. They can go to my website, which is venture and then D as in Dexheimer or dog properties.com. Mm-hmm. And then I also have a podcast. It is Pillars of Wealth Creation. So they can go to Pillars of Wealth Creation. They can search my name on iTunes or whatever and check that out as well. Yeah, it's probably the best way.
So the second question is, it's a two-part question. One, how far from Nashville are you?
How far do I live or how far am I investing?
No, how far do you live from Nashville?
Oh boy. So Nashville is probably a 12 to 14 hour drive or a 2.5-3 hour flight.
I like 2.5 hour
flight. Yeah. 2.5 hours sounds good because we have a live event coming up at the end of this year. And I think you'd be a great person to come hang out.
Yeah. So that'd be fun.
Get on the schedule, man. We'd love to have you.
Well, so Cincinnati is not very far. And then my 84 unit and 120 is in Lexington, Kentucky.
Well, maybe it's a road trip then. Maybe it is a road trip.
Well, I would fly to Lexington and then maybe drive to Nashville. How far is Nashville from Lexington? Maybe
probably 3 hours.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, 3 to 4 hours.
Yeah.
That's cool. Great. I've never been to Nashville. That'd be fun.
Yeah, great. I think this is the year for it. So,
when are you guys doing that advertising plug here?
Gino, what are the dates?
October 6th and 7th. Right now we're planning to do it at the Renaissance. It's in downtown. It's a great venue. We're looking to get 300 people. And we're going to, you know, we have about 10 speakers this year. So we've really consolidated the speaking, but everything. It's buy right, manage right, and finance right. No upselling. We're there. We just got a lot of great speakers. We've got a syndication attorney. We got Reed Goosens, who's emceeing it. We've got Kim Taylor, who's our syndication attorney. We've got Jay Scott from Bigger Pockets. He's going to be doing a couple of really cool presentations. We learned from the first one. The first one, we had a great time. We just had so many speakers. This one's going to be more networking. We've got all our vendors there. So if anyone wants to talk to our vendors as far as Appfolio or laundry vendor or insurance guy, that's what it is. And you said about relationship building. That's what it's all about. It's all about getting out there and meeting people, getting out of your comfort zone and talking to people who are in the business who are doing it. That's what I think is the most important thing about real estate. Just get out of your comfort zone.
Build that team.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So,
yeah. And you know, the building those relationships, you don't know where they're going to lead. And what, you know, you always have to be adding value to that person, but that value can come back to you as well.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Totally.
G-Dad, that's all I got.
That's all you got? Anything? Well, I just want to, you know, thank Todd for being on the show. I'm going to be battling with him on Bigger Pockets for the next couple of years, I guess, for the top spot. I mean, on the multifamily. So I always see his threads there. He's always adding value there. So guys, you know, when you're on Bigger Pockets, vote him up because he puts out a lot of threads. He puts a lot of, you know, we put a lot of thought into writing stuff because, you know, we're, I guess, more visible. And, you know, we're just trying to help movies get out there and just make it happen. And like Todd said, get out there, read books. You know, just don't take our advice for it, but, you know, just get out there and do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think
boom, shakalaka. All right, guys. Todd, thanks for the time.
Thanks, Todd. Yeah,
absolutely. Have a great day, guys.
Thanks.
See you.
We trust that you enjoy the Wheelbarrow Profits podcast. Visit jakeandgino.com, your one-stop shop for everything multifamily. See you next time when Jake and Gino share more of their investing secrets with you.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track. We care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.